Hello and welcome to another episode of Sparks Conversation. We are back and we are going to be doing a big episode today. I'm back with Rowan today, our co-host. He is back. He has dragged himself out of the pits of writing master's coursework to help me talk about sleep this weekend. Weekend, it's a Friday, isn't it? I'm wishful thinking. So how are you, mate? You okay?
It is indeed. Yeah, I'm all good, man. I thought I'd grace you again with my presence, get out of the coursework writing. As good as your episode was last week, I felt like I was missing. So,
yeah, man, I won't sack
bring everything back up.
I won't sack you again. Thank God. Hopefully, Rowan's uni Wi-Fi isn't too shoddy. So if he disappears, please excuse him. That's just the uni life, I'm afraid. So, like we said, today is going to be quite a detailed episode about something basically we talk to our clients about all the time, and they probably get bored of us talking about it for a number of reasons, but we're going to be talking about sleep today. It's going to be quite an information-heavy podcast, video, however you're listening to this. So sit back, listen on your walk, on your drive, whatever you're doing. But don't forget to follow us on Spotify, give us a like on YouTube, all of the good stuff. Okay, so hopefully technology will be my friend and I can share a mind map. Right, we're in. And it's still recording, so we're good to go. So like we said, we're going to talk about sleep and we're going to go, hopefully, in an order that makes sense. So we're going to try and define sleep. Obviously, we are not sleep scientists. We are not professors. We are not professors times 10. We are getting all of this information from people way more intelligent than us. One of the main sources being Matthew Walker, Why We Sleep. He's probably the leading industry expert on this stuff. We've also read some research papers in the making of this kind of mind map to hopefully inform the information we put out. So in terms of definitions, there's lots of different things within sleep. Like initially, you probably think of sleep as just the period where you close your eyes and then you wake up. And as you get older, you seem to value its importance a lot more. I think it's because we generally get more and more tired as we get older. And we see the only way of getting a rest from the world is having a sleep. That's my current
pretty
mindset.
Accurate.
That's my mindset at the moment. But within sleep, there's obviously different facets. There's different stages. There's different processes that are happening. And it will help us and help our kind of ability to grow muscle, lose fat, if we understand what's happening, why it's happening, and how we can potentially improve that. So when we're sleeping, we're going through sleep cycles. So during a sleep cycle, one sleep cycle, we're looking around 1 to 2 hours. And of course, with everything here, this is completely person dependent. My sleep cycle might be faster than Rowan's. Rowan's might be slower than mine. And that is just the way the world works. So you've got to take this information with a pinch of salt, that it's not set in stone. It's just what people think. And there's very often going to be kind of ranges that you'd be working between. So like I said, we're going to be, during the duration of our sleep, going through sleep cycles, and within that there's different stages of sleep. So we have non-REM sleep, so that's non-rapid eye movement sleep, and then we have REM sleep. They're the two main stages. Of course, there are different stages within those stages, which is where it gets slightly more stressful. So of course, if you're watching this, it's a lot easier because I'm talking through a mind map. If you're listening on Spotify, get on over to YouTube, because otherwise you're going to have no idea what I'm pointing at. So in terms of the way we move through a sleep cycle, we're going to be starting in wakefulness, okay? And in wakefulness, that's our conscious state, okay? We're thinking, we're awake. We're not alert. We're not bouncing around the walls. We're lying in bed. We're probably thinking about something that's happened in the day or something that's happening in the future. And in this period, our heart rate and our breathing is faster and our mind is full of electrical activity. And it's the electrical activity that's very interesting. And obviously I'm not proclaiming to be like an expert in this, but it's super interesting to read what they think happens to our brain activity when we go through these different stages. So we're in wakefulness. This is the period before sleep, okay? And then we move into non-REM stage one. So like I said up here, we have non-REM sleep, but within that stage of a cycle, we have three stages that we will move through in order until you get to the end where we go back into stage two. Confusing. Yes. So in non-REM sleep one, so we can call that N1, this is a dozing off period. And this is a light stage of sleep where our brain activity begins to slow down. Because remember, in wakefulness, our brain's pretty much functioning at full electrical capacity. Obviously, we're not solving algebra, or we're not kind of trying to learn a new language, but it's pretty much firing on all cylinders. If we needed to, we could get up and walk around. In N1 or non-rapid eye movement stage one, it's starting to downregulate, and that happens, and the same happens with our breathing and with our heart rate as we begin to move into that light stage of sleep. We then move into N2, and that is the actual point where we fall into the light sleep. So this is where we kind of quote unquote potentially are asleep. Okay. So eye movement stops, our body temperature begins to drop. And our brain begins to change how it's kind of dispensing its electrical activity. So remember, in wakefulness, like I said, firing all cylinders. And now it's starting to reduce that to short bursts of electrical activity. And on average, this is from Matthew Walker, this stage is about 10 to 30 minutes, but most spend half of their deep sleep in this stage. So this is the kind of start. Well, it's not the start, because wakefulness is the start of the sleep cycle, but this is where we spend the majority of our sleep cycle. And it's kind of the main starting point of where we're actually asleep. I'm going to give Rowan a chance to talk now. Have you got anything to say on that, mate?
Not too specifically. I think I'll probably add more comments after we've gone through the rest of the other stages.
Cool, man. So that was N2. So that was non-REM stage two. And now we move into stage three, okay? So this is non-REM stage three. And this is quote unquote deep sleep, okay? So in terms of our brain activity, instead of it being those short bursts that were in the previous N2 stage, our brain starts to emit these low frequency, high amplitude delta wave patterns. And of course, I'm not going to go into this detail on this, but these are some kind of quote unquote where the magic happens in terms of sleep. Like, the professors are fascinated with why our brain emits these types of patterns and these types of waves, because we do it at no other point in the day. We can only do this when we're asleep. And they hypothesize, obviously they don't know because they can't ask the waves what they're doing, but they hypothesize that this is the stage of sleep where we're repairing and we're recovering. So as an athlete who's probably trying to grow muscle and lose fat, it would make sense that we are trying to get into this stage at some point, okay, frequently, and we're not doing anything that might impact that, okay, because this is potentially where we are recovering from our training, recovering from the stimulus that we're trying to kind of create the adaptation from. And what's really important with this stage is it actually happens more at the start of the night. So this is why I'd potentially ask you to go to bed a little bit earlier if we're really in an aggressive kind of progression phase, because earlier on in the night, we're going to spend longer in this non-rapid eye movement stage three, as opposed to later on in the night slash early morning, because as we start moving towards the early morning, our body's starting to think about waking up because it's following our natural circadian rhythm, which we'll talk about in a minute. In terms of N3 or non-rapid eye movement stage three, from one research paper, they suggested that we should spend around 13 to 23% of our duration of time asleep in this stage. So working that backwards from a hour sleep, that could be between 62 minutes to 110 minutes. From personal experience, and of course, I would only be using kind of a fitness tracker to work that out, that seems quite high. And looking and having looked at data for a long time on people's sleep, that would seem quite high. However, I'm more than happy for people to prove me wrong. And then we go into probably a sleep stage that you know probably or have heard a little bit more about. And this is REM sleep. And REM, rapid eye movement sleep, is often called kind of the dream state, because this is where we experience our dreams, whether you remember them or not. This is where they happen. And again, more interesting things happen here. So instead of kind of in the deeper stages of sleep where our heart rate and our brain activity down regulates, in REM sleep, our heart rate actually increases, because obviously we are getting quite stimulated by our dreams. And instead of the low frequency waves that we would kind of emit during these deeper stages, we go to active theta waves. And I am not going to tell you what they are because I don't necessarily think it is that important. We just need to know that different stages mean different things for our brain. And during this, our body does experience paralysis, obviously to prevent us from acting out our dreams. And then once we've gone through REM sleep, we'll go back to the start of the cycle, which is normally wakefulness. So after the period of paralysis in REM sleep, we will then go through a short burst of quote unquote wakefulness. This isn't where you kind of wake up and go for a jog. This is just potentially where you turn over, you break that paralysis, and then you enter back through the sleep stages again. I personally can remember every time I kind of pretty much turn over, and it's a very weird experience when you kind of start to think about it and you're like, right now I'm starting a new sleep cycle. But I wouldn't recommend that because that actually just impacts your sleep, because then you're just in this matrix of thinking about what's happening. So that's the sleep stages. Like, that's quite information heavy. So I don't want to kind of dwell too much on this, but basically you just need to know that different sleep stages serve a different purpose. We'll need to be spending different periods in different stages. But if we can, like we'll talk about later, create an environment that's good, our body will be pretty good at regulating where we naturally need more. So don't necessarily think like go into your Thursday nights and be like, right, tonight's the night I'm going to get 50% deep sleep as opposed to loads of dreams, because that's not kind of how it works. Our body will regulate that. So what we need to think about and what we'll speak about later on is we need to just give our body the best opportunity, the best fighting chance to do what it needs to do with sleep. And it'll be pretty good if we manage everything else at doing it efficiently. But like we'll speak about, there's quite a few things stacked up against us. So before we move on from the definitions, I think it's important to talk about circadian rhythms. And I see this as kind of one of the most powerful things with sleep. It can also be a bit of an annoying factor, because I can only, the easiest way to explain it to people is a 24-hour cycle that our body kind of follows. And this is impacted by a number of different things. Physical, mental, and behavioral factors all go into this. But in terms of sleep, it's basically our natural routine that we create around waking up and going to bed. Our body really likes structure. So if you're working a 9-to-5 and in the week you wake up at 6 o'clock every day, chances are on a Saturday and Sunday, your body will wake you up at 6 o'clock, regardless of whether you want a lie-in. That's your circadian rhythm kicking in, because like we'll talk about later on, your circadian rhythm will impact your mechanisms of sleep. So your hormone production and your suppression of certain chemicals that will impact your sleep, such as adenosine and so on and so forth. So we can really be, efficient in how we, I don't want to say hack, because people love like, ooh, sleep hacks, fitness hacks, gym hacks. But we can be very Sorry, carry on.
Sorry. So humans are inherently one of the only, I say, creatures that can almost use their own free choice to ignore their natural circadian rhythm. Most other animals, if they feel tired, they'll go to sleep. If they're awake, then they'll start their day. We are the only beings that can choose to ignore those feelings. Like
through our behavioral changes and through our mental kind of decisions. Because we're cognitive, aren't we? So
exactly.
I think it's one of the main things that we can hack that we'll talk about later on. But circadian rhythms are very much dictated in the modern world, outside of our behavioral, mental, and physical kind of processes, around light exposure. And light exposure is very important. We'll talk about this more later on in how we can improve it, how we can improve our sleep. But basically, our eyes kind of take in the light that's around us. And at different times of the day, the sun emits different types of light. It may just all seem the same, but it's not. It has different, what's the word? It's like it's measured in different lux. So it's different kind of, I don't want to say velocity. That's not the right word. Velocity, the right word?
I think it would be more the strength of the waves.
Yeah, it's like different. It emits different lux, basically. Different strengths of the waves, let's say that. And then our eyes will absorb those, and that will set our circadian rhythm. So we can either bring it forward, we can advance our circadian rhythm, or we can delay it. So we'll talk about that later on, but I just wanted to talk about circadian rhythm, what it is, why we're going to talk about it, why it's important, and why it's one of the most fundamental things in improving our sleep. Because once you nail it and you kind of nail your internal body clock, it's actually quite a good place to be. Like right now, I've absolutely nailed mine. Like I can wake up at the same time every day without an alarm within like a 10-minute window. And then I know like all of the other processes are taken care of in terms of like hormone excretion at the right points of the day. Because for example, like last night, like I went to the Christmas market trying to be social despite my autism. And it was like 9:30, and that's late for me. And I just felt so tired, and I wasn't drinking. I wasn't doing anything. I was just so tired. And I was just like, you know what? That's just my circadian rhythm excreting all these hormones for me. Because normally I'm in bed by 9:30. So I had to drag myself home, which was an experience. But yeah, less of that. So that's some basic definitions of things that are very important in terms of the discussion around sleep. Obviously, the literature is endless. And like, if you want to learn more about clever things, go listen to more cleverer people than us. We're just going to talk about it briefly and move on. Do you want to touch on the mechanisms of sleep, Ryan, or do you want to leave that for now and we'll come back to it later?
I'll briefly touch on it at least.
Cool.
So kind of as Alex said, the kind of excretion of different hormones will vary depending on the time of the day. So towards the end of the day is when melatonin excretion increases. That can be then affected by the light emitted from like devices and stuff like that, which may have lower the amount that is excreted. And melatonin, as we kind of have just touched on, helps you get into sleep, I'll just say. Whilst you're then going through the night, other hormones such as like growth hormone, etc., is released. That will then help with recovery.
All the good stuff. More growth hormone. That's basically the main takeaway.
More growth
is just spend all of your time asleep and you'll just be on growth hormone.
Live in a dark room for 23 hours a day.
Yes.
Sorted.
Sorters. Yeah. Sorry. Sorry. Just got to keep it alive. It's quite intense. This.
Oh, of course. Oh. If that light wasn't a pun, then get out of here.
Exactly. I know. I see what you did there. Sorry. Carry on. Dad jokes. Rowan.
Oh, Christ. No kid, still dad jokes. Then as you get into kind of like the early morning, melatonin excretion decreases, cortisol production increases, and then that's what helps bring you kind of out of that sleep and feeling more, hopefully, alert when you have woken up.
Yeah, exactly. And what we've got to remember is, as you've probably heard from us speaking here, it's hard to kind of just talk about one thing in isolation. Like, they are all like mutually beneficial in the way they operate. So it may seem like we're kind of jumping around the place, but it's really hard not to just flow into the next thing and then the next thing with sleep, because they're literally all intrinsically linked, which makes it really interesting, but also really quite hard to talk about and not get super kind of bogged down in. So that's the definitions out of the way. Like, we don't necessarily need to worry too much about those. They'll all be there if you want to kind of go and look at them. Obviously, if you're listening, good luck. But now we're going to talk about we're going to talk about duration and quality. So this is kind of a widely debated topic, okay? You will have heard a lot of mixed information about this. And rightly so, because there is mixed information in the literature. Like, people are not set on what's optimal and what's the perfect way to go about it. But in terms of duration, so time asleep, Matthew Walker, so the guy I've spoken about a lot, he recommends anywhere above 8 hours. And of course, there's a number of factors that will impact that, like your lifestyle. Like we were talking about before, like, if you have children, chances are you're probably not getting 8 hours. But that's the cards you've been dealt, and you're just going to have to crack on and live with that. But I think a good rule of thumb is to kind of aim for that 8 hour mark. Like, if you set the 8 hours as the benchmark, if we get a client on and they're getting 5 hours and we say, right, we need to improve it, and we gradually progress that to 7 hours, that is going to benefit them no end. Like, that will be such an improvement. And am I going to beat myself up and am I going to hound them to get them to that 8 hour mark? Potentially not. If you're thinking, right, this person works in London, they've got an hour and a half commute, they get home at 9:30. I'm asking to do all these other things like meal prep, the train. We can sacrifice like 30 minutes if we've made a drastic improvement from that kind of really poor starting point. And then I'm just going to switch over to quality now. So let's say like there is the magic 8 hours for the time we want to be spending asleep. That's not just time in bed. And in terms of quality, again, this is a very debated area, because sleep quality is quite advanced to understand. Like, there's a lot of research going into it at the moment because of, we haven't actually spoken about it, the risks of poor sleep on the body. But we'll talk about that in a minute, because I don't want to get too doom and gloom in the current climate with all of the viruses that's going around. Don't say the C word. So in terms of quality, we need to be thinking about the time we are asleep. Is it of actual good quality? Are we moving through the sleep stages? Are we spending adequate time in each sleep stage? And of course, sleep quality has been linked to actually improving our perception of sleep and our general mood. And this is where the relationship between duration and quality is quite interesting, because some people suggest that you should worry more about quality and spend less time asleep. And some people will say, if you have a longer duration, the chances of your quality being higher are improved. So you've got to find like a middle ground, okay? And you might be asked to track your sleep quality if you are tracking sleep with a tracker. Of course, this is not 100% accurate. Like, we're not suggesting that it is, but it is just a measure, okay? And lots of Fitbits, Apple Watches will give you out a reading, and that will not often be called your sleep efficiency. And that is basically just your total sleep versus time spent in bed. There might be some complex algorithm in there, but that is the basic format of it. And what we've got to think about with quality, and we spoke about this again before you get on air, like, there is potential for sleep anxiety to creep in when we start tracking duration and quality. And by sleep anxiety, I mean, once you start, by now, you know that sleep's important for you. We will have told you. But it's very easy to start worrying about that and then impacting your sleep, as we'll talk about what impacts sleep later on. Stress and anxiety is one of the biggest ones. So if you're getting direct anxiety around the quality of your sleep and the duration, you're going to be kind of, you're going to be impacting your sleep quality and your duration overall. So we'll probably ask you to think about objective measures versus subjective measures. So if you are tracking, that will be your objective measure. So that will be like data driven. And then we'll ask you to perceive your sleep. And we'd often ask you to do that before you look at your objective data, so you're not influenced by the data. So your coach might ask you to wake up, do your usual things, don't look at your data, and then make an subjective kind of measurement of how you slept or how you feel from that sleep the night before. Because like we said, your fitness tracker won't be 100% accurate. So if you wake up and you feel fully rested after a lovely 7-hour sleep, you feel wonderfully rested, like everything's good, life's dandy, you look at your sleep tracker, your sleep quality is 60%. That will impact you, and that will impact how you perceive and subsequently go about your day following that. So that's where you'll always be comparing like a subjective measure against an objective measure, and using them to find, like we said, the sweet spot. Okay. In terms of quality, I read a little bit from the National Sleep Foundation. Of course, these are more generic kind of recommendations, but they recommend that good sleep quality often includes things such as falling asleep within 30 minutes. So you're not kind of tossing and turning, lying around in bed for like an hour, hour and a half. Above 80% sleep efficiency. So if you're watching, that is a typo. So that's two typos there. Who's proofreading this? Coaches nowadays can't spell, can't complete numbers. Qualified teacher, so let me off. So above 80% sleep efficiency. So again, like we said, sleep efficiency is total sleep versus time spent in bed. In terms of being awake, that should be less than 20 minutes across the night. This is often impacted greatly by age. As you get older, chances are you'll probably spend longer awake than when you are younger. But again, completely person dependent. And they suggest not waking up more than once. And coming from a contest prep, that worries me, because I was up in that toilet going for a wee at least 6-7 times a night. So my sleep quality must have been at least 3. I wasn't tracking it because I do get sleep anxiety. And I find that when I love data, and I know data is the king. So when I track, I go all in. And by going all in, I would find myself, just like I said, getting really depressed about my poor sleep quality, because I'll know, right, this is increasing my risk of cancer and stuff like that. And that's not a good thought to have when you wake up and check your data and sleep. Like, that's not why we're here. We're not here to fearmonger you into getting more sleep. We're here to kind of help you grow more muscle and lose more fat. And sleep is one of the most powerful tools in that. So that's quality, that's duration touched upon. Like, is there anything you want to add on that, buddy?
So kind of as we spoke about at the start, there is more about finding a sweet spot for where it fits into your life and you feel good afterwards.
Exactly.
If you're sleeping for 5 hours a night and waking up feeling awful, we're probably going to say you're going to need a little bit more sleep and to try and make it slightly better.
Exactly.
And likewise, you could sleep for 11, 12 hours, wake up feeling awful, and we're going to say, okay, maybe you need to sleep a little bit less, and we'll still look at how to then improve that. So I think...
Exactly. And it's important to say, like, it's important, it's irrelevant to know how long you need to sleep and how, what quality your sleep needs to be if you can't actually impact that. And that's why we're going to talk about how you actually improve your sleep. Like, it's all well and good knowing you need more sleep, but then not actually knowing how and why and how to set yourself best up best for that sleep. So we've spoken about quality, we've spoken about duration, we've spoken about tracking, about sleep anxiety. Obviously, tracking is not 100% accurate, but it is some data compared to no data. So depending who you are, your coach will ask you to track or not track, or whether it's important for you or whether it's not. Chances are, like, if you're serious about growing muscle and losing body fat and kind of optimizing your physique, you should probably be tracking, unless it's causing you direct sleep anxiety, where tracking itself is distorting your sleep, because obviously that's not why we're doing it. So that's the heavier stuff out of the way. And now we're going to move on to, hopefully, if you're watching, how we can improve sleep and the key factors affecting sleep. Okay. Let's briefly touch on the implications of poor sleep. And like I said, I didn't want to dwell too long on this because it is quite doom and gloom. But it is good to have some perspective of why your coach, so
why we're doing this.
Yeah, why we're doing this. Why are we trying to, because yes, we're here to grow muscle, lose fat, but like we need, it's one of our key indicators of health overall. So it's been directly linked to a lot of kind of nasty things. So those being just a general increased risk of mortality from poor sleep, increased risk of cancer, lowers your lifespan, reduces sports performance, which is obviously not what we want, reduces muscle hypertrophy. It can reduce our ability to kind of accurately execute a diet through its impact on hormones such as leptin and ghrelin, which we really want to kind of try and have under somewhat of control during a diet. Otherwise, we're going to be all over the place in terms of our hunger signaling. And increases the risk of mental illness. And coming from like a place of anxiety in general, like I do struggle with anxiety. I know for a fact that if I have a poor night's sleep, my anxiety is through the roof. And that's not a good place to be in. So that's why I value kind of sleep, not just in the long run, but in the short term as well, is one of our most powerful tools for basically improving life quality overall. And every night sleep, it's not just sleeping for like you tomorrow, it's sleeping for you in the future as well. That's something I think is a good mindset shift. But likewise, you are only young once. So again, it's a complete trade-off. Like, you do what you need to do as a client, and we'll hold you accountable to that sleep, for these obvious reasons. Like, we don't want any of this on any of our clients. So moving on from the doom and gloom, let's close that down. So let's talk about the key factors affecting sleep, and then we'll talk about how to actually improve your sleep. Actionable advice. So it's quite a heavy slide. So like we spoke about in the definition section, some of, not all of, because there is a million one things that can affect your sleep. Like, obviously, your life circumstances, but I can't go through every unique life circumstance in an hour-long podcast because we'd be here for hours. But these are some of, not all of, the key factors affecting sleep in most people. So like we spoke about in the circadian rhythm section, light exposure is very important in regulating and setting our circadian rhythm. That is one of the key factors in us being able to get good quality sleep. Because, for example, if we're getting a lot of light exposure at the end of the day when our body's trying to naturally excrete melatonin, we're going to be kind of blunting that. We're going to be blocking that. And then we're going to be trying to kind of overcome biology and go to sleep without our natural hormones for sleep present. So light exposure is a massive one. So what we'd need to be thinking about there is, in the morning, kind of getting as much light exposure as we can. Like I said, there's different frequencies of lux throughout the day emitted from the sun. So the sun is the light source that we want to be kind of relying on the most. Okay. Even on like a cloudy day, I listened to a podcast from Matthew Walker talk about this the other day. Like, even on a cloudy day where you think the sun is not kind of beaming on you, there is still a good amount of lux. Like, the sun is a powerful thing. Okay. The whole world, everything just runs around the sun, basically. So get outside, basically. Like, get out, expose your face, expose your eyes to the sun. Like, try not to use sunglasses in the morning. Obviously, safety first. You could look at using kind of like I've got here, one of these, but one of these, so in terms of like a high frequency LED or happiness lamp, I can't necessarily say I feel too happy from them just yet, but the jury's not up yet. There is a massive difference between these and actual sunlight. So get out in the sun, expose your eyes, set your circadian rhythm. I also think there's some merit in, especially in these dark winter months, going out at dusk and experiencing that transition from kind of light to dark. Obviously, like, if you're working in an office, this might not be able to happen, but even just kind of standing by a window, experiencing that change in sun frequency will help set that circadian rhythm. Like, you don't have to go out and be full vegan and take your socks off and kind of go wallowing in a bog with like Shrek, but it can be actionable. Like, I'm sat by a window now, so most of the day my eyes are getting exposed to different frequencies of light. I'll turn on this happiness lamp, air quotations there, in the morning for about an hour and a half, so I know that I'm kind of exposing my eyes to that light. And I'll also go out, everyone, if you follow me on social media, knows I go out for a walk at sunrise anyway. So that's my routine to kind of get the light exposure. I think that's the most easy kind of, if we dip down to like how to improve sleep, I think that's probably one of the ones in terms of sleep hygiene that will really impact you and is completely free. Like I said, once you kind of set your circadian rhythm, it can be the best, it can be the easiest thing to improve your sleep. And it's worked with tons of clients. So get outside, basically. Get outside. Next is chemicals. Sounds quite abrupt when I just say chemical. It's like if we're talking about bleach or something. And by that, we mean mainly, probably not in the fitness realm. Well, two of them probably not in the fitness realm, but one of them definitely. Alcohol, caffeine, and nicotine. Okay, so all of these things have been shown to directly impact sleep. Alcohol impacts our ability to kind of move between sleep stages. I don't want to spend too long on that because we're probably not drinking that much as kind of athletes anyway. Nicotine, again, is a stimulant. The only real reason you might be using nicotine or nicotine gum would be in a really aggressive dieting phase. If you are a smoker, we'll probably be telling you to stop smoking and supporting you in that. But you wouldn't want to be kind of smoking in the evening or taking any nicotine gum in the evening. For obvious reasons, it is a stimulant that will kind of do the opposite of what we want to be doing pre-bed. And one that I know that everyone in fitness abuses is caffeine. Okay. And caffeine is quite interesting. Interesting in the fact that it's great and I love it. But it actually blocks adenosine how do the Americans pronounce it? Well, no one from America is watching this anyway. So blocks adenosine. And adenosine is our sleep pressure hormone. Okay. So when we wake up, we'll build adenosine across the day. And that will be our sleep pressure. And that will go alongside all of our other hormonal kind of functions to when our body thinks we are ready to sleep, we have that drowsy feeling. And that is when our adenosine is quite high. So when the minute we take caffeine, someone's going to quote me if I'm wrong, caffeine sits on the receptors of adenosine because they are the same kind of makeup and blocks. Is that right, Rowan? Or am I making that up?
Yeah. No, that's pretty accurate.
Pretty accurate. So, more accurate?
So the caffeine and adenosine share a very similar shape. So caffeine blocks adenosine from binding to the adenosine receptors. And then because of that, the short of it is that's why it kind of causes a stimulatory effect. So it causes the brain to, what is it? I think it releases more kind of like happy hormones and increases alertness through that. Yeah. Whereas adenosine is more linked to
like down regulation, like sleep, feelings of sleepiness. So the opposite of caffeine.
Exactly.
An important outside of kind of its relationship with adenosine is that caffeine stays in your system for a long time. Of course, again, this is very person dependent and will everyone have a unique caffeine tolerance, but the general rule of thumb is that caffeine's half-life is anywhere between, I think, well, Matthew Walker says kind of 6 hours, but from the research that I said, it could be between like 5 and 8, depending on kind of your tolerance to it. That means it has a quarter life of like 2 to 4 hours. So if you're consuming a large Starbucks coffee, if you want to sponsor the podcast, get in touch, projectsparks@gmail.com. If you're having a large coffee, let's say that's got, let's say round it up, 300 milligrams of caffeine, and you're having that at 12 noon. At 6 p.m., you're going to have 150 milligrams of caffeine, say, because half of it is still in your system. And then at 12 o'clock at night, potentially, or is it at 9 o'clock? It would be at 9 o'clock.
Okay.
At 9 o'clock, there would still be 75 milligrams in your system. So that's quite important because some of you watching this will be training after work. You'll be smashing a pre-workout, which will probably have anywhere above 200 milligrams of caffeine in it. If you're a meathead like Rowan, you're probably double scooping it, which would take it up to kind of more 400 milligrams. And we know, like, you can't deny that caffeine will still be in your system when you're trying to sleep, and it will be impacting your sleep stages. I don't care who you are. You cannot, like, science has proven it will have an effect. So what you need to start thinking about, I think everyone would benefit from having a cutoff in caffeine. And this is a bit of a shitter. It's earlier than you'd probably want. I'd probably say 1 o'clock should be the cutoff for most people. So this is where, like, if you're relying on caffeine for your evening workout, you have to look at your lifestyle factors and improving your sleep overall and your general behaviors so that you're not relying on that stimulant, and potentially look at like a stimulant free. You can still get the effects, all the other effects apart from the stimulatory effects from a stimulant free kind of pre-workout. But I think caffeine is probably the biggest kind of, has the biggest impact on most people's sleep, because it's very much a social thing. If you meet someone after work, you might go for a coffee. Or you meet you know that you've trained well on a pre-workout or a large coffee. You're going to, if you love training like us, you're going to have that coffee, okay? And the sooner you realize that it will impact your sleep is the sooner you can kind of get on top of that. And in terms of caffeine, like we've spoken about on pods before, definitely look at cycling it, because you can really kind of, if you have a week of reduced caffeine, track your sleep and see how much better you sleep and you feel after the initial withdrawal, where you feel like a bit of a crack addict. You'll see how much it was potentially kind of impacting things. But that's a story for another story. Matthew Walker also is big on the sleep environment. So sleep environment is what it is. It's your immediate environment around sleep. So do you have blackout blinds in your room? Because we know light stimulates everything to do with sleep. So if you're trying to sleep and there's, in the summer, this is more applicable, sunlight coming into your room, your body will start to think about waking up. Likewise, are all of your lights in your room as bright as this all the time when you're watching Netflix and stuff? Because if they are, they're going to be doing the opposite of what your body or your natural circadian rhythm is trying to do. In terms of temperature, it is suggested by Matthew Walker again, and a lot of the research, that a slightly cooler room is more beneficial to sleep. That's why most of the time during a heat wave, people will struggle with sleep. And everyone actually gets quite grumpy in a sleep heat wave because the room temperature is too hot and we actually like it a little bit cooler. Of course, it's person dependent, but have you got anything to add on sleep environment? I think I've missed something. Those are the three main things I think about. Obviously, get a high quality mattress, like
yeah,
if you can afford it, and stuff like that.
Yeah, it'll be good quality mattress, pillows. Being aware of sound as well. If you're living somewhere quite noisy, it may not be the best idea to have the window open. So potentially earbuds. Looking into, yeah.
Earbuds are really cheap. I used earbuds when I lived in like the center of Bath. They did help a lot. But like my addictive personality, I then couldn't sleep without them. So if I ever forgot them, couldn't sleep. My mind, mate, I just wish my mind didn't work like that. But it does. That's just the way.
Basically, you need to be by yourself in the middle of nowhere in the pitch black.
Exactly, with a gym.
Yeah.
So that's like your immediate sleep environment. But like Matthew Walker talks about, like your sleep environment actually extends to kind of your whole day and your whole approach to kind of sleep hygiene, which we'll talk about later on. Another key factor, like we spoke about, is stress and anxiety. And if cortisol is high, we want cortisol in terms of sleep only really when we wake up. We don't want cortisol high throughout the day because cortisol is quite a stimulating hormone. So when we're trying to down-regulate things and get ready for sleep, we don't want to be super stressed. Of course, if you have anxiety and have a highly stressful life, that's the card you've been dealt. Try and improve the situation around that. So again, this links directly to kind of your sleep environment. Is it a calm sleep environment, or have you got like house music blaring until you're trying to go sleep? Are you on war zone with the lads and you're just getting really agitated? Like, it's not just like, right, you've got a stressful environment, let's leave it at that, or you're super stressed. Like, why are you stressed? Like, yes, if you've got life stresses and you're busy with work, okay, you can be stressed because of that. But if they're self-inflicted stresses, like you like, it's like I said, you're playing music, you're stimulating yourself, like stuff like that, they can be improved. And obviously can improve your sleep overall. Of course, most of you won't be doing this, but shift work is obviously not ideal for our natural sleep pattern. Again, Matthew Walker directly links shift. Isn't shift work labeled as like a mortality risk profession now? That's why you're paid more, I think, is one of the main reasons you're paid more during a night shift.
Don't know about that, but definitely I know that it is very commonly associated with increased mortality or just general illness.
Yes. So obviously, again, if you have to do shift work, that is the card you have been dealt. And we're not going to delve into how to necessarily overcome shift work sleeping patterns in this pod, because that's a pod on itself. But obviously shift work directly impacts our sleep. And of course, if you feel like you've got sleep disorder, so insomnia, is it sleep apnea? Is it a P?
Yeah, struggle breathing.
Yeah, struggle breathing during sleep. Seek medical help, okay? And of course, like if we identify things, like if we're doing our utmost to improve your sleep and you're saying like, I'm awake all night, we'll probably refer you to an external professional, because that's part of our role. Like, we're not going to try and coach you through something if we think it's like a medical condition. Yeah. So those are some of the main factors affecting sleep. And now we're going to talk about how we can kind of improve sleep or improve these things that we've just spoken about. So you've got to be careful when you're trying to improve sleep, because like anything with fitness, people are going to try and sell you something. And very often with sleep anyway, the most improvements come from the free stuff.
Yes.
Like light exposure, like sleep hygiene, which we'll probably touch on first. So do you want to talk about sleep hygiene, mate? Because I'm aware I've spoken a lot.
That's okay. So I think we have kind of spoken about some of the things throughout the rest of the podcast. At least a good sleep hygiene will involve routines that you've developed throughout the day. So it'll be like the consistent going to sleep and waking up times, the amount of time you spend on your phone or devices in front of the computer, etc., as well as how far from the sleep kind of period it's been since you came off of it. Because like we kind of just said, ideally you wouldn't be staring at it full brightness, put it down and then immediately roll over to try and go to sleep.
Exactly.
The lowering of temperature of the room. So I think it's during deep sleep, that's where your temperature decreases, as you said. So if you're putting the room in a slightly more favorable position, it may more naturally decrease into a temperature that it kind of likes being in. And I like this last point, is a consistent sleep environment. One night's good sleep isn't going to make up for the other 6 days being quite poor. You're probably better off just putting in kind of smaller changes and slowly trying to bring up that entire period until eventually you're ticking the boxes off and every day you're waking up feeling great.
Exactly. And I think like some easy ones with sleep hygiene in your sleep environment, like let's tick those off now. So like, where is the sleep environment? There we go. Like we said, they're directly linked. I think like the easiest, I think the thing that impacts most people outside of kind of stimulants is having a poor routine around sleep. Like I said, our circadian rhythm, and I've said this the whole way through, this is one of the first things I said, like our circadian rhythm loves to work like clockwork. It literally runs on a clock. So creating a, like I said, and you said, routine around that, where you are consistently waking up and going to bed at the same time, will mean that your body will then become more efficient and improve the efficiency of the time that you are sleeping. Because it will become very regulated and kind of systematized in that. And the biggest thing I see impacting people in our generation is phone use and social media use. And I would recommend putting, Apple are very good at this now. They want you to use your phone, but they also want to make themselves look like they're looking out for you. So they have things in place that you can do. So you can put a limit on the amount of time you use apps. You can put night mode on your all devices now. But one and a powerful tool that I would use is sleep with your phone outside of your room. Because how many of you listening to this podcast, the minute you kind of feel yourself awake, will reach for that phone, even if it's just to check the time or see if you've got an immediate push notifications on your home screen. That's not good for sleep. Like, because when we are literally just dipping into, where am I? If you're listening to this, I'm showing you something. So sorry. If we're literally just dipping into wakefulness, where we're meant to just literally roll over and then go back through the non-rapid eye movement stages, but what's actually happening is that we are being drawn to our electronic device. We're breaking that cycle and we're making it very disjointed and our body will be thinking what's going on. So remove that distraction altogether. Put your phone outside your room. It'll feel weird at first, but going through a period where I wanted to really check my messages and stuff, like I found it really helpful because I even started and went to the extreme of I would not look at my phone from about 8:30 onwards because I didn't want to be impacted by anything that was going on my phone or on social media after that point, because I valued my sleep and I didn't want to be like, especially in the current climate with things that are happening in the world, you don't want to be getting wound up by a speech from Boris at like 9 o'clock at night. Like, you don't want that. Like, it will still be there in the morning. And if it's like a pressing issue, I'm sure they'll ring you or like they'll come and get you. Do you know what I mean? Like, you've got to remember, like, social media is not that important. Likewise, like lads group chats are not that important. They might feel great, but they're not that important. And all of the fun stuff and all of the memes will still be there in the morning. But what won't be there in the morning is your ability to sleep and recover from the poor night's sleep you've had. So you value sleep how you want. I value it very highly, so I put these measures in place. So that's sleep environment, sleep hygiene. Of course, you can kind of spend more money on bedding. Mattresses are pretty expensive nowadays because people know how important they are. I think with that is like find the recipe that works for you and stick with it. Like if you find a bedding you like, buy two of them. So when you're changing them, you're not, because I know a lot of people are, I was like this for a bit. Like I had one bedding I really liked and one that I didn't. And I always slept poorly when I was washing my favorite bedding. It's just things like that. Like you can overcome that pretty simply. Again, stimulant management, like we spoke about quite in depth earlier on. Cutting off caffeine. If you smoke, don't be having any in the evening, or quit smoking altogether, probably better for you. Reducing that caffeine or managing it, cycling through periods of caffeine and no caffeine. Again, your routine and your management of that routine. So like we said, hacking your circadian rhythm, consistency around that routine, stress management. So this is something that is probably more accepted nowadays, that obviously with how things are going, like if you are really struggling with stress and anxiety, like I would always recommend like external help with that. Like coming from experience, like getting a therapist was helpful during quite a stressful period of my life. So they know what they're doing and they can help you work through things. And very often talking can help relieve stress massively. But in terms of kind of more actionable things outside of therapy and kind of going find external advice, is I think most people should be kind of gratitude journaling. Even if it's just kind of putting thoughts onto paper, getting thoughts out of head onto paper before bed. So I've got mine here. When I remember to do it, I do it before bed, because everyone's been there before where something's happened in the day or something's happening in the future and they're lying in bed and that's all they can think about. And I'd say that relates to stress management. Like really, we don't want to be thinking about anything before bed. We want to be thinking about kind of just nice, happy bunnies in the field so we can fall asleep. So getting those thoughts out onto paper will really help. And lastly, and I do say lastly, because again, with anything, supplementation is a supplement to wider behavioral and lifestyle interventions. You could potentially look at supplementation, okay? Again, the list is endless of what people will try and push on you for sleep, okay? The main ones I've come across are magnesium glycinate, important that it's a glycinate, ashwagandha, and melatonin, okay? Melatonin, obviously, because it is directly linked to sleep, is pretty much regarded as the sleep hormone. Matthew Walker, actually, in a recent kind of interview I watched with him in the research for this pod, he said that in fit and healthy individuals, supplementing with melatonin was pretty much a very expensive waste of money. So that's the leading expert on sleep saying that. So take whether you want to supplement with it with a pinch or so. I probably wouldn't recommend for the vast majority of people to supplement with it. I would only probably recommend it if, one, you have the disposable income. One, if you've covered all of your other bases around sleep hygiene, sleep environment first. Two, whether you have disposable income, because it is quite expensive. And three, whether I want to let you use it. Because I think most of the time people can get on without it. Like we've said, supplement with it will literally just introduce melatonin into your system when potentially you're not naturally excreting it yourself. But normally you won't be excreting it. That's not the right word. Producing it because of all of the lifestyle factors that we've spoken about before, and your management of your routine and your circadian rhythm. Ashwagandha.
I have heard.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry to interrupt. I have heard that longer term use of melatonin supplementation can impact your body's natural production.
With it, so like with anything, so be careful with it. And yeah. I probably err on the side of no one using it. I'm just touching on it mainly because people will have heard of it. And you're probably following someone on social media who says to supplement with it. And I have used it before. However, I have found much more benefit from addressing my kind of lifestyle issues and my stress management than that when I supplemented with the melatonin. So I supplemented with the melatonin, this kind of experiment, when I was dieting, when I was kind of 19. And I wasn't addressing any of my lifestyle factors. Caffeine was high because I was working. I was teaching at the time. Light exposure was poor. Stress management was really poor. Like, I was definitely anxious. I wasn't doing anything about it. Supplemented with melatonin. So tried to put like a plaster on like a gaping flesh wound. I fell asleep, but my quality was poor and I actually just didn't improve at all. Whereas now, for example, if we compare it to now where I'm managing my sleep environment, my routine, my light exposure, all of the three things, and I'm not using melatonin, I'm sleeping better than I ever have. That's anecdotal evidence. You can take it with a pinch of salt, but again, with supplements is a big one. Next one I'd say can be helpful from my experience and from research in its relationship with stress management and kind of mood is ashwagandha. It's quite a cheap supplement. It is getting quite a lot of traction at the moment from kind of Strom. If you go into the bodybuilding world, they'll use it in their kind of PM priming stack and support Max Neuro for its relationship with, well, from the research, it's heavily researched into anxiety management. And arguably, I think most people will have some form of anxiety. Obviously, you'll be on a spectrum, okay? Like, some people will just feel anxious about decisions. That's natural. But then some people will have the chronic form. And this can be one of the main reasons why our stress goes up, because we're worrying about the future. We're worrying about things we need to do. And if we can take ashwagandha and that might mitigate it slightly, I think it could be beneficial. Again, your coach will tell you whether to kind of grab some or not. But of course, you can take it upon yourself and try it. And another one is magnesium glycinate. Magnesium has a whole heap of benefits outside of sleep, but its potential role in sleep. Again, Matthew Walker actually kind of disproved this or suggested against it, but I think he is more just generally against supplementation and more for lifestyle and behavioral changes like we are. But it can help you relax. I don't know the exact chemistry of it. Do you know anything on that, Rowan?
No. Nothing.
No, that's fine. There's different forms of magnesium which will have different bioavailability in the body. I just know that magnesium glycinate is the most, I think, don't quote me on this, one of the most bioavailable forms. So you probably should be supplementing with magnesium anyway. You probably will if you've gone through a nutrition assessment with one of us and we've identified that you're pretty low in magnesium. But magnesium pre-bed could potentially improve your sleep just through its ability to relax your muscles and support general kind of regulation of mood around the point of the day where we want to actually sleep. But your main focus should be on your sleep environment, sleep hygiene, lifestyle routine, and your stress management overall. As opposed to supplementation. That's why we haven't spent too long on supplementation. But that brings us to a close, mate. I think, like, have you got anything else you want to add on it? Like, we've spoken about a lot of different things. We've gone quite nerdy. We've given some actionable advice. Is there anything else you want to say, buddy?
I think it's one of those topics that you can easily break down into a lot of detail, but the general takeaway should be quite simple. It's try and place more of an emphasis on getting a good night's sleep for a decent amount of time. Don't spend every single hour of your waking day in front of some sort of device that's emitting some sort of light that will negatively impact your sleep. And just generally, I guess, be aware of some of the factors within your routine.
Yeah.
Some of your lifestyle factors that may then affect how you sleep.
And exactly. And with everything we talk about, like, there's levels to this. Like, you don't all want to be like me. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, just pick and choose what you want to do. Probably lean into the things that impact sleep the most. So around that sleep hygiene, sleep environment. Because most people can make improvements there. Like, get some blackout blinds from IKEA, 30 quid. Improvements in sleep already. Start thinking about, even the process of thinking about, right, I need to go off my devices now, is a step in the right direction. Like, you don't have to lock your laptop and your phone in, like, the house down the street. But, like, even the thought process of, like, I know this is impacting my sleep. Tonight, I'm going to try and go off Netflix a little bit earlier. Or I might read a book. Do you know what I mean? And then you'll start to see, like, for yourself, right, that was a good night's sleep. And I can't deny that I put my phone down earlier last night. And then you start to see, right, I can do this easily. And it's that process of behavior change over the long run that will really kind of go against all of those scary negatives that everyone, like, throws in your face, like the headlines from The Sun. It's like, sleep 5 hours, die a death tomorrow. It's just like, no thanks. Like, no one needs to know that. But that wraps up the pod. So thank you for listening. Thank you to Rowan for listening to me speak to him about sleep, basically, for the past hour.
My pleasure.
Don't forget to follow us on social media, like, comment, subscribe if you're on YouTube. Share the pod with your friends. It would help us out a great deal. And if you are this far into the podcast or video, you can work with me or Rowan just by following the links on our website. There'll be links to signing up with us. And obviously, because we offer online coaching to help people, individuals, in their physique development. So if that sounds like you and you like what we do over here at Project Sparks, head over to projectsparks.com and apply through there. But other than that, thank you for being here, Rowan. And I'll let you
get
the rest of your day.
Thank you. Take care, man.